Hi, everyone. Happy New Year again. It's officially 2024, and I'm recording this on January 10th. For those of you who have the Radical Being calendar and are going to be enjoying that in the year ahead, I will record my first podcast of the month really close to the first few days of each month, because the intention is to have the ideas for the theme of that month in mind. So in February, you know, I'll post either the first, second, or third, somewhere in there. And obviously you don't have to have the calendar. It will be information that's right in line with all we've been exploring together, particularly in the past year. I kind of marvel at the fact that it was just a year ago that we started in on the reality transurfing material. And by far and away has that been the most listened to information. That is something that's really feeding people. People are hungry for it. People are interested in that reality shift. And I completely agree. I'm so excited about all that. It has changed my life incredibly so. And so we're just continuing on in those veins. And in fact, coming up, I know I've done Neville Goddard's work in the past, but we're going to take a deeper dive this year in sync with what we're doing on the calendar, because he has such a wealth of information all in the public domain that we can really sink our teeth into. And we have a better understanding now, if you've been following along with the podcast, because we've been practicing the reality transurfing principles, and all of these dovetail together really, really beautifully and really powerfully. So we'll be doing a deeper dive into Neville's work because I get it so much better now than I have, you know, having previously talked about it. He's been such an inspiration to me, and it just blows my mind that he was offering this perspective in the 50s. And obviously it was very counterculture then, because we have so much more in the public sphere now about consciousness and manifesting, etc. So it just really, I marvel that he was this voice, you know, in the mid part of the last century. It just amazes me. But anyway, so that's coming up. We'll do more with that. And in terms of the calendar itself, I created the calendar intentionally with themes and statements that will build on each other month to month. So we are beginning with January's message today of simply I am, and we're going to talk about that here in just a minute. But I also wanted to point out that in the actual grid of the calendar, in addition to the holidays for the U.S. and the Northern Hemisphere, I've also noted the Celtic seasonal holiday observations, because those are important for those of us. And if you follow along with this podcast, you know we're always touching on that. The seasonal rhythm. I'm not a fan of schedules, but I love to have a rhythm. And to be in harmony with nature's rhythm, I really like looking at the Celtic calendar for that. So our first event, if you will be around February 2nd. And we'll talk about that next month. And that's called Imbolc, or in the U.S., it's often called Groundhog's Day. And it's when the growing light that began at the winter solstice really starts to be perceivable. You know, we start to notice that the days are getting longer. And then obviously, if the groundhog sees his shadow or not, it tells us if we're going to have more winter or not. So we'll talk about that, but that sort of kicks off our first Celtic holiday observation. And that's just really, for me, I'm not Celtic, but it ties us to that beautiful seasonal rhythm. And I love that. And then I've also noted all of the moons that we tend to talk about in the context of our podcast together. And so you'll see on tomorrow, as a matter of fact, the new wolf moon begins tomorrow. And the full wolf moon will be the 25th. So I've marked all the moons that we talk about. And I've often shared poetry around those moons. And sometimes I'll talk about moon and lunar poetry, and sometimes I'll share other kinds of poetry. But I like to begin by referencing that and just knowing where we are in the seasons of the moon and in the phases of the moon. Obviously, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, the wolf moon gets its name because it's the time when wolves are on the hunt. It's often wintry conditions, snowy conditions, and it just sort of encapsulates that hunger and that hunting and that kind of lean and lonesome time or alone time and the solitude of that and the gifts of solitude of that. I like to set intentions at the beginning of a moon phase, of a lunar phase, and watch them come to fruition. And then I like to release things after the full moon. Release ideas, emotions, thoughts, habits that are no longer serving. So that's just one idea for a way to use the calendar, is when the new moon comes into view to nurture an idea or a vision, and then release 2 weeks later at the full. So that's just, again, there are all kinds of ways to be in step with the seasons and the changes and the rhythms. But those are a few ideas as we contemplate January. If you remember from last time, we had a meditation for New Year's Eve. And I think I've mentioned in the past, I'm not a New Year's resolution person because I've left the idea of quote-unquote self-improvement behind. That's not an idea that resonates for me anymore. However, allowing my authentic self to shine more fully, to release old identities so that my divine nature can lead and shine and delight in the world and in my own being. That for me is the place to begin in January. And in the last podcast, when we did the meditation, I suggested bringing a vision and a heart's desire around 4 areas of your life. One being your health and your vitality. The second one being your relationships. The third one being your financial and time flow, the ease with which you have flexibility there. And then the fourth one being your vocation or your talents, your gifts. And so we're going to revisit those ideas today in context with I Am, which is our theme for the month today and for January. And I just can't emphasize enough that I have said I am very unconsciously most of my life. And I see now that as you move into unity consciousness, these are words to really hold dear and hold consciously. Because whatever we're putting after the statement I am is the signal we are putting out that we want to receive more of. So these are powerful words. This is a powerful magic to be very conscious with. And by way of review, remember the 4 states of consciousness that we've talked about in the past. And Peter Sage originally suggested these 4, and I think it's just so enormously helpful because it's so simple and easy to grasp. But that first consciousness is the to-me consciousness, victim consciousness. We all have been there. We all fall into it unconsciously still at times. But it's the consciousness where we don't realize we have any agency. Everything is happening, quote-unquote, to us. Then we move to by-me consciousness. And this is where we develop an expansion in our education, whether that's formal or by reading self-help books, psychology. This is where we engage with a work ethic and apply ourselves and realize that we have agency. This is a very, very important phase. Most of the external world is deeply situated here. No, there's plenty of folks in victim, for sure. But it's very seductive to also be identified with work ethic. And the reason I say that is it's important. It's wonderful to know we have agency and step into that next consciousness because there's a power center there. But this pales in comparison to what comes after that. And it's very easy, I'm speaking from experience here, to be so seduced by lingering here too long. It's an important phase. It's an essential phase. We learn so much here. But when work ethic starts to become your identity, that's a sure sign that you're being escorted out onto the next level of consciousness. Because, and you know when you see these people, oh my God, it's so annoying. This is kind of my cross to bear right now. And it's just because it's been a shadow and a trigger for me, because I've just newly left that consciousness myself. And I'm still wrangling a bit with what this area beyond that is. Like, it's so enticing to me. It's so exciting to me. And that's what all of our disciplines about reality transurfing and everything, Neville Goddard stuff, have been teaching us, is how to start to come into harmony with the consciousness beyond work ethic. But the reason it's a little bit triggering for me still is because, and I just realized this just the other day, it's because I thought I had some kind of control there. And man, I got booted out of that really quickly. And let me explain, you know, it's so good in the beginning of work ethic consciousness to feel your agency. But I have been doing that since I was born. And after 50 some years of that, you know, that was hardening into an identity for me, whether it had to do with my marriage or my business or my body and my health or finances, what have you. Man, if I just worked harder, I would have control over those results. And the universe keeps pushing, and it only because it loves us so much. Only because love itself wants to guide our lives. Only because there is a power beyond that, that is actually a flow state and a magic, a real honest to God magic of its own. And I'm all about embracing and learning and surrendering into that and knowing its ways. But that transition where work ethic stops working for you, and no matter how hard you're trying, you're actually getting diminishing results, that's when you know you're being prodded on to the next phase. And when I see people out in the community that really have an identity, you can tell when you bump into them about how hard they work and how lazy other people are, or et cetera, et cetera. I just kind of smile to myself because I'm like, well, it won't be long until you don't have this control either. It's kind of like that story about the caterpillar that kind of comments, looks at the butterflies above and says, man, you won't get me up there anytime soon. That's what I think about when I hear people all up in their feelings about their work ethic. Because, yeah, it's going to change. And there's nothing you can do about that but get used to the new phase. And so you all have so graciously accompanied me on particularly the last year of moving into that new phase. And that third area of consciousness is through me consciousness. That is a peak state a moment of grace. It's very much a visitation of what lies beyond, and we don't have any control over when that finds us, but it reminds us that something else can be moving through us and actually inspiring our lives in a brand new way. Which brings us to the fourth, as-me consciousness. This is unity consciousness, and the realizations here are never going to end. They're never going to stop deepening and asking us to release old identities until we touch the bedrock of being and love itself. And that is what my last 2 months have been about in particular, not because I'm like, oh yeah, I've got unity consciousness down now, but just meaning the last 2 months in particular in my walk have been really about stripping away all the old identities. And there's something so beautiful at the core that you touch when you realize, and I'm just beginning to realize this, but that you know that every beautiful outcome, every experiential joy in all the four areas of our lives that we would love to embrace and experience, that is coming to you as an experience for one reason, and that is simply because you are. Simply because I am. Simply because the divine is the divine. That's it. And that process of letting go of other identities, whether it be worker bee or, you know, successful fill in the blank or mother, that's been a really recent one for me. And it's not because I'm like fighting with my kids or anything, but I even had to release the idea of what a mother was, because that's a deep one, isn't it? If you have children, to be a parent, to be a mother or a father, to even let that idea go and realize that my value is because I am. And so your value is because you are. That's it. Bringing this back to the idea of the calendar for this month, the I am statement, it matters so much that we're getting beneath any identity that is keeping us in old thought patterns, old emotional states, that is limiting us in any way, and that we're replacing and finishing that statement with something wondrous and really of the heart's desire. So we're going to talk about specifics of doing that today. But there's one more thing I wanted to make a distinction about. When we did the meditation last time, I remember saying that I had a beautiful vision that encompassed all four of those areas, the relational, the health, the vocation and talent, and the time, money, freedom, all those quadrants. I have a really beautiful vision that I've been cultivating and nurturing in my imagination for about a year now. And I wanted to explain that, quote unquote, manifesting sometimes happens really, really quickly. And indeed, we are manifesting all the time. So let me more properly say that consciously manifesting something that is an outcome that we want to experience can happen very, very quickly. And I think I, maybe even 5 years ago, I remember I needed to sell a house quickly, and I needed to, you know, there were several things on the list. And, you know, I had the beginnings of having a vision, those sorts of ideas in mind. I had the beginnings of that, and those manifestations happened very quickly, like within a couple days, even sometimes, or a very few weeks at the most. And so I want to make this distinction about what is happening, at least for me, and it may apply to you. I had early success with that, not knowing really what I was doing, but taking some agency for putting out in my feeling state and in my imagination what I wanted to receive. Sometimes there's a concurring psychological process that's happening, which Jung, C.G. Jung, would call individuation. And not everybody is about that in every lifetime. You know, there are people that are just happy in their life, and they might be at one of the earlier consciousness stages, and that's exactly appropriate. It is my belief we all move through all of these, you know, eventually as we graduate from the earth dimension, whatever that is about. I mean, these are deep, deep and great, great mysteries we're talking about here. But it feels right to me that eventually part of the journey of being human is to remember our divinity. And so when we move into levels 3 and 4 of consciousness, when we're merging with our most integral self, which is the authentic self, which is the capital self, when we're merging with that, there is no room for any other identity other than being and love and life itself. And that is the animating principle then for what we experience after that. And when the process of merging with that is also happening in one's life, it has been my experience that the process of quote unquote manifesting takes on a fullness to it that I don't think I had any sort of real appreciation for in the beginning. And so when I said in the meditation that I had this vision that I've been nurturing for a year, I didn't want to discourage people by suggesting that it's always going to take that much time. But having had some earlier success in my life with the beginning phases of how to consciously manifest, now for me, I have moved into this fuller space of merging with the unity consciousness principles and surrendering to that and really opening to that divine center, being my center of gravity, not just my human perspective. The human perspective, the egoic perspective is always important. We need our ego. My Lori Green identity is important to a point, and it's not like I'm leaving that behind. The ego and the self have this relationship with each other. And I know it gets a little schizophrenic sometimes, but, you know, they're both needed. But what matters so much moving into unity consciousness is that the center of gravity, that we keep surrendering to that incredible power, and it shifts things in a really profound way. And this vision I've had of those 4 areas that I've been nurturing, I see now, has been a way of communicating, or communing, if you will, with that fullness of myself. Because to inhabit that and to experience that, what I'm discovering is I am becoming the capital self through that process. I'm becoming more of that by the moment and by allowing these other identities to fall away. So this is just a way of saying, I think we can find ourselves at different moments, even in quote unquote consciously manifesting. Sometimes it's a one-off. Sometimes it's like, no, I've got this down. I know how to do it. I know how to release it, visualize it, release it, expect it, etc. And then there's this, I'm letting the process of imagination and consciously working with that strip me of any other identity but self. And on the other side of that rebirth, I am also enjoying the fruits of a beautiful earthly life because I'm here and I want to enjoy that and embody that and be that and experience that. It is our purpose here, in my view, to wake up to our divinity and to have a beautiful life, to have fun, to have incredible joy and richness in all of these areas. For me, there's been a quickening of late about letting these old identities go, and I've leaned into trusting that. So I just wanted to make that distinction because sometimes, and there's so much out in the community right now about quote unquote manifesting. And I think you'll find folks in all kinds of spaces around those ideas. For me, Neville Goddard's work goes really to that deeper, fuller, experiential merging with the self, with the I am being love nature, and really claiming that. And that's why his work is so controversial to people of earlier consciousness places, because it can sound blasphemous even, or it can sound like you're being insensitive to certain demographics or genders or what have you. But it doesn't matter in unity consciousness, the color of your skin or your orientation of any kind, you're going for divinity, period. That's the ultimate identity. So how that expresses itself through you can be all kinds of beautiful ways, but to let beingness itself inform that, we're letting all these other identities go. So activism, if you will, in my experience, takes place in different areas of consciousness than unity consciousness. Because in unity consciousness, activism is all done internally. It's not done externally. That doesn't mean you can't be for things. It doesn't mean you can't be for peace and goodness and, you know, giving to your humane society and things like that. It doesn't mean that you can't be for really wonderful uses for your money or ways of giving and sharing with others. But in terms of how we change things, in unity consciousness, we are accepting the reality that the only place to do that is within. And then, if you are inspired to take external action, you do so. So I wanted to make that distinction. And right on the tails of that, I know I've shared this poem before by Derek Walcott, but I want to share it again. It's called Love After Love. And for me, this really embodies so beautifully what we're talking about here. And he says, the time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. Indeed, this is the only way we will have a sustainable feast in all four of those areas of our life, is to access the self and to let that inspire the visions, the decisions, the ways of being. the ways of love. This is the only place to have source that will never run dry in those areas. And it's worth all of the discomfort of letting these old identities go. So circling back to I am, if you have the calendar, you see this beautiful swan. And that was chosen with great intention because, you know, in those earlier stages of consciousness, we are ugly ducklings. We are trying to figure it out. And then something magical happens and there's an arrival that actually was always there, but we can allow it to reveal itself. And that being quality, that love cornerstone for your life then launches a whole new phase that is so fundamentally alive in the way that living hasn't felt before. And it's incredibly humbling to even begin to fathom that. And I am a student of this, but I feel its absolute grace and beauty and power, and to and in service of I am. Really consider the four quadrants of your life and think of ways to finish that sentence in such a fashion that it's sounding like I am wealth, I am joy, I am the prize, I am union, I am love. See how it feels to lean into those sorts of statements. And then again, our imagination, Neville Goddard says, God is the imagination, and we all have it. We are all coming home to the realization of this, to use that in service of the beautiful heart's desires and to think fully and feelingly from the reality of those visions. We're going to talk about that in my 3 points today. That'll be number 3. And I have some excellent pointers on living from the vision that just found me yesterday that are so enormously helpful. So that's coming up here. But this I am statement is an invitation to let old identities go and go deeper. And of course, when you're using the imagination to imagine how you look or feel in your most healthy state or in your relationships, that's all done so beautifully with images and scenes. That is a beautiful fleshing out and proper use of imagination, because we want to give the mirror world its marching orders, if you will. We want to give it the specifics of what we want to experience. So it needs those details and it will reflect those back to us. But in terms of identity, just watch in your I am statements that if you're holding on to old identities, like I am a good daughter or I am a perfectionist or things like that, allow those to go. Allow those to be re-energized in a new way. Allow the energy of that to fuel a new, deeper, quieter, more powerful sense of being. So the 3 pointers that I would like to suggest today as things to keep in mind in January in service to I am. One is talking about revision, which I mentioned last time that I learned something more about revision. Number 2 is unplugging. And number 3 is living in dream awareness. So these are the 3 things we're going to talk about today. And I was listening to a Neville Goddard lecture just a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned this last time, and I heard something that I had not picked up before. And that is, we've talked about the act of revision in terms of our daily process. So if we have encountered something in our external world that didn't go exactly as we would have liked it to, or etc., we can revise that at night, imagining in the divine imagination how we would have loved for that to have gone. And two things are happening there. One, you're opening your mind to that possibility, which often challenges old identities in doing so. Because if you can't think of, you know, your neighbor being an awesome person, they're never going to show up as one. We have to stretch the mind's capacity to receive something fuller than we've experienced before. And number two, we are giving that animation. We are allowing then the mirror world, the quantum field, the law, as Neville calls it, that neutral force that mirrors things back to us. We're allowing that to run with that information and create that experience. And create, as I've mentioned before, isn't even the best word, because what's happening is when you can pick up on any alternative, whether you're in the act of revision or whether you are visioning from the heart's desire, you are actually picking up on a frequency of event that belongs to you already. It's already happened. That's where the assurance and the law of assumption, you can assume the reality of that. Otherwise, you couldn't even in your imagination pick up on that. It has to exist for you to have even connected with it. And I know that can feel slippery sometimes, but just keep leaning into that, leaning into that. I've said it 1,000 times to myself. I've heard it 1,000 times. And then I'll relax more into that. I'll relax more into that. And by way of example, I want to talk about that film Interstellar just for a moment. It came out in 2014. And if you haven't seen it and you're interested in quantum realities and parallel realities, give that film another go and see how much more you pick up this time. Christopher Nolan is the director, and I have noticed that anything he's putting out is quantum inspired. And I think he's doing such an amazing service to the collective culture, because he's telling of truths that are hard to talk about in story form. And he's doing it at the level of the collective, you know, motion picture. And so a lot of times we're being introduced to ideas and becoming comfortable with them through storytelling, that then when we start to engage with these ideas more psychologically, there's room to embrace that. So I feel like he's doing such an amazing service to all of us. And he's a wonderful director, and I love his films. But Interstellar, if you haven't seen it, is, it takes place in a little bit of a distant future on Earth, and the need to perhaps recolonize on other planets is sort of the focus. And I won't, you know, ruin the film for you. It has Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway and Michael Caine, just Jessica Chastain, a beautiful cast, wonderful cast, Matt Damon. But the story eventually, midpoint on the last half of the story, and it's almost a 3-hour film, really starts to go into some quantum truths. And I read that Christopher Nolan had asked physicists and quantum physicists to be on board and look at the science of the film because he wanted that to ring true. And so that's exciting too. You know, if you're still moving from a rational, I want my facts place about some of these psychological truths, that's a way to sort of engage with that if that's still important bridge work for you. And there's a moment where one of the main characters enters a scene where there are endless options of one particular moment in time that he can choose. And it's a really important and pivotal moment in the film, and you'll see this, and it just takes my breath away. Now, I was intrigued by it 10 years ago, 9 years ago when I saw it, but now I understand it. Not saying I understand the quantum mechanics of it, but I understand psychologically that love is the frequency that is guiding this main character at that moment to connect with a loved one. Love is the frequency that can choose an outcome that might look nearly identical to a parallel outcome, but is fuller, has another opportunity involved with it, has other outcomes. And that particular part of the film illustrates so understandably how infinity is presenting itself through our heart's desires and through what we are seeking is seeking us. So it's this really powerful moment in the film. And this brings us back to this Neville Goddard lecture I just heard a few weeks ago, where we talk about revision as a daily practice, but he mentioned going back farther in time, because time is not behaving as a constant when we enter into unity consciousness. That is irrelevant. And Neville talked about going back farther into time in terms of visioning your life. And so let me give an example of that, because I got really excited when I heard that. I was driving my car. That's a really good time for me to process information, because my monkey mind, my human ego mind is busy driving, and it lets some of the other wisdom in more readily. So I was having this great moment of understanding while I was driving and realizing that we can go back further in our personal histories if we would like to shift something. And let me just give you a really concrete example. I started my small business in 2015, in November of 2015. And at that time, you know, it's grown and it's evolved into many different things, and it's still inventing itself and reinventing itself. I certainly didn't even know what a podcast was in 2015. You know, that I just, let alone that I would be doing one. So I'm open. But one thing that I didn't know then that I know now is that at the inception of my business, I didn't have a moment where I could go out and get like a personal loan so as to pay myself while I was creating my business and all the facets that it became. And that's important. That is something I see as an injustice to myself now. And so I didn't then, because I was still really much in work ethic consciousness then, even though I was really spiritual and I was heading towards the edge of that for sure. But I just thought, I'll hustle. I'll just make this work. I'll do grad school and do this business and raise the kids and be a good partner and do all these things all at the same time. And I'll just work harder. And the joke's on me, because, you know, I love my big heart about that. But the universe and the self are like, we have something better in mind. It's going to get a little uncomfortable for a while, but hang in there, because it's going to get great. And a lot of these identities and ways of doing things, ways of working harder, I've had to let those go so that I could use and learn to properly engage with my imagination. because this is the way. This is the way now. This is the way to really come into the spectacular lives we are supposed to be enjoying here, rooted in our divinity. But looking back at my 2015 self and looking at my present moment and my financial goals for each month, etc., this amazing thing occurred to me then that I could go back in time to that moment where I wasn't paying myself and change that. And I know that when I'm in the consulting space, etc., I know, I feel it fully, I've felt it for a long time, that my time and expertise is worth at least $100 an hour. I know that. I know that. I don't even question that anymore. And that's not like yay me over anybody else, but I have rooted in my value there. I didn't know that in 2015 about myself. I know that now. And so when I think back, quote unquote, in time, and I think, oh my God, if I had been paid $100 an hour for every hour that I have devoted to my business. Now, that's in addition to what others might send my way because they're enjoying the podcast or what they might purchase on the website or what they might engage for my time in the consulting space, etc., or for workshops, etc. That's in addition to that. That's just saying, you know, this website didn't happen by itself. I didn't learn to do the podcast, you know, without devoting time. That is saying my whole business, I changed in that moment, that from that inception forward, that creating my business, quote unquote, paying myself was worth $100 an hour. Because I can tell you this, if I were at this moment speaking to you from that nest egg from 2015 of having received $100 an hour for all the time I've put into my small business, my student loan, all these things are a done deal. That's just paid in full. That is paid in full. And I have a massive nest egg. So the amazing and exciting thing about going back in time with revision is I went back to that moment because I had learned a fuller, more beautiful sense of value about myself. And I went back into that moment and I made a statement that I am, here we go, I am paid $100 an hour for every hour I devote to my business. And so how that comes to me is not my business. That is for the mirror world, the law, the quantum field. Those are all synonymous names. That is for that neutral energy and vehicle of sensory experience to reflect back to me. That is not my business, the how. But look what I did by going back, quote unquote, in time and changing that. I opened up a whole new set of revenue, a whole new set of options for myself. If you're going to look at the interstellar moment pictorially and imagistically, you'll see that I opened up a whole new series of lanes that I could choose and that could choose me, ways for that abundance to flow into me, because my mirror world up until this point has been operating on, she doesn't pay herself. So we're going to only pay her when she's doing goods and services because she didn't decide to pay herself as well. Well, I changed that 2 weeks ago. And I'm super excited about that. So there are things we did earlier on in more limited states of consciousness. Maybe there's an agreement you had about yourself as a partner that you would like to change. For example, I only give from a place of fullness now. That's what love is. And we've talked about that. I only give from a place of fullness now. The emphasis shifting from external to self-love and giving from that overflowing. That could be something in the more distant past that you would like to revisit and change. Do it. And that's only opening up more quantum possibilities to be reflected back to us. So I wanted to share that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful idea that's so, so exciting to me, that we can go back further in time and have a new idea that's only going to open up more quantum lanes to become available to how we would like to be blessed according to our heart's desires. If you have a thought about your health that you don't want to carry anymore, for example, let's say a certain kind of cancer runs in your family, would you like to drop that idea? Would you like to go back to maybe you were 5 years old and heard that your family gets diabetes or your family gets et cetera, et cetera? Go back in time and take exception with that idea, with that thought. Pluck it out of your garden. Take it out as the weed that it is. And let that energy transform into something different. Remove those long-held ideas and shift to something that serves your heart's desires. So I really wanted to share this number one idea about going back further into past revision and engaging with that process. Number two, it's a very simple idea, but when we are bumping into old thought patterns, emotion patterns, fears, doubts, something that I have found exceedingly helpful is to picture that almost like a Frankenstein monster, if you will. And I just go over to the wall and I unplug it. And I just literally see it going bloop, 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 like falling down on itself. Like I'm not animating that anymore. If it's doubt, if it's fear, if it's worry, whatever. If it's a certain thought that's just running. And here's the other thing. Allow it to be there. It's not like I'm trying to get rid of it. It can be there. As long as we are embodying a human form, those fears and doubts and worries, they're always going to be there to a certain extent. But the important thing is they're not in the driver's seat. So here's another image that is helpful for me is I think of myself driving a vehicle and I have opened to the self with a capital S being the intelligence, being the quality of presence and consciousness that's driving in service to my heart's desires and in service to life. And my ego self can ride shotgun. I mean, it's going to be there and I love it. You know, it's allowing me to experience things, but it needs to ride in the passenger seat. So that image or the image of, you know, like a Frankenstein monster or thing that has taken on a life of its own. I love the image of just going over and unplugging that from the wall, just taking the energy source out of that. I don't have to get rid of it. I don't have to make it go away. Acceptance and embracing is far more helpful because when we say don't think of a pink elephant, that's exactly what we think of. So it's an embracing of that. And often, again, as we've said in the past, it's revealing an area of resistance that is helpful to become aware of. But unplug the energy of the thought, the emotion, the worry, the fear, the doubt that is not serving you. And then finally, there's this idea that I've been working with very much in the past probably 3 weeks that is so helpful to me. And as somebody trained in depth psychology, I've traveled with this idea for a long time, but not in terms of unity consciousness. I love the dream life. I have always resonated with understanding the psyche's language, the unconscious language of the symbols and the imagery. And I have valued that communication for years. And I'm really good with dreams. I'm good with helping folks understand their dreams and understanding my own. And there's a new aspect to this that I had been taught in my grad program, but now I have a whole new understanding of. And that is, as we learn to dialogue with the unconscious and receive its wisdom through dream symbols, an added benefit is that you start to look at your external waking life as though it is also a dream. Because psyche is not just something that dwells within you, we're seeing a mirror of it externally because it's coming back at us through the events and circumstances of our lives. So to look at the external world on a day-to-day basis as though it's a dream gives several benefits right away. Number one, anything is possible. We enter that state that we are in dreams where anything is possible. We don't have a predictive quality because our human war catalog of all the things that could go wrong is kicking in. We suddenly have a fresh perspective, which is the perspective of the now consciousness. And that's essential. Really try this. Lean into seeing your entire day as though it's a dream. And the second part of that is realizing that most of the time in dreams, we're pretty neutral. There are times where we might feel afraid, but a lot of times we take ourselves much more lightly. And that is a great service to this integration of ourself and our ego and that shifting that center of gravity. Because from the self's perspective, everything's fine. We are home, we are loved, we are wealth, we are cared for. There is absolutely nothing ever to worry about ever, ever. So I love this perspective of seeing what's happening in the day-to-day as a dream. And then if there's something you don't like, you can do revision at night, because what's happening is that we are distinguishing now between our imaginal vision, which could also be called a dream, and then the one we're experiencing. And the incredible value of this practice is one of those is real. And that, from the perspective of unity consciousness, is your imaginal vision, the one with the four quadrants that you have been tending to and creating and seeking to live from, the feeling of, so as to experience it in the external world. But when things show up in your external world on a day-to-day basis that don't match it yet, viewing it as a dream helps depotentiate the negativity around that or the resistance to it. And so you just make a mental note, hey, I can revise that. I can revise it right now. I could revise it this evening. And you go back to your imaginal practice. The vision from your heart's desire is your reality. That is what is real, not what is happening externally until they reflect each other. And so that is part of the discipline too, is in the greater context of I am not this life. I am my reality. I am this one. And I'm not going to freak out, and I'm not going to react, and I'm not going to feed the external events going on here unless I'm inspired to take aligned action with what Neville calls a bridge of incidents. Sometimes when the mirror world or the quantum field or the law is creating the link between the world we might be living in, the world that is our imaginal home, that is our reality, there will be bridges of incidents that start connecting those and bridging the worlds. And to act on a bridge of incidents feels inspired and light and easy. So that's how you know it's inspired and aligned action. But I ran across as recently as yesterday, obviously she found me, but I was on YouTube doing a meditation, and I ran across this YouTuber by the name of Missy Renee. And she's a young woman. She is a really good teacher, and she has a lot of videos out about Neville Goddard's work. And she has a really great way of explaining his work. And there are probably others out there doing a great job of it too, but some I have found easier to understand. I think she has a singular gift for explaining it really, really well. And I ran across one of her videos that she only posted about 2 months ago, and I believe it's called It Is Done. Anyway, check out her channel if you would like more reinforcement. I think she has several channels, but she's definitely on YouTube. Again, Missy Renee. And she was talking about some tips for living from the reality state. And I loved this because Neville talks about when this really begins to gather momentum is when we're not put off by external events that are not reflecting our imagined reality. We're not put off by those. We ignore them. We ignore them. We set it aside. And we live from the feeling. The feeling is the secret. We hear that over and over again from the Neville Goddard work. The feeling is the secret. But what Missy Renee said yesterday as I watched her video is it is so essential to only know that one of those is real. And to just enjoy it. She said, if you go through your day living as though you're in that imaginal state all the time, just being at home in it, loving the relationships you're having, loving your health, loving your financial flow, loving all these things, loving what you're doing with your vocation and your gifts, you basically, and I just, it was just a nuance, but it was impactful to me. If you're living most of your day in that headspace, like this is what's real. This is what's real. And you're living from the joy of that. What's happening psychologically is you really are merging with the self. Because you don't have other identities. You don't have any of these limitations that may have contributed to some of the scenarios that you're encountering in the daytime in the external world. It's moot. It's irrelevant. And to engage with that as though it's a dream and it's not a big deal and just set it aside and say, my reality is where I'm living from all the time. And then she said something that hit me so profoundly. She said, you can relax into this because it already happened. And she's right. Every time I go into that imaginal space where I'm enjoying those four quadrants of my beautiful heart's desire life and all of its fullness, I know it already happened because I've been there 100 times, more than that. And at any point during the external day, I can drop into that and just enjoy those scenes and scenarios and relationships and health and vitality. I can drop in at any time. I know it already happened because I can call it up with a snap of a finger. It already exists. It already happened. That's why I can trust it. That's why I can trust it. So I hope that nuance is helpful to you. She really emphasized that this is about having the courage to say the external is not real. My vision is what is real, and this is what we're learning to do when we're moving into unity consciousness, because we are here to know ourselves as the divine, and the divine is experiencing the very, very best. So again, points 1, 2, and 3 that are in service of the I Am for the month of January. 1, go farther into your past revision and open up some more possibilities for the quantum field to work with. 2, unplug the quote-unquote machine of any thought or pattern or identity or whatever monster can sort of take over the hamster wheel of your brain. Just unplug it from the wall. Let the ego ride shotgun, but let yourself be in the driver's seat. And 3, live in dream awareness, knowing that your vision that has the 4 quadrants primed from the heart's desires, chosen from the heart's desires, know that that is your only reality, and that anything else you are seeing is not real. That doesn't mean you don't do clerical tasks. It doesn't mean you don't, you know, buy groceries and do clerical things that you need to do. But anything with any kind of energy, relationship dynamics, visions for important decisions or choices, engage with those from the imagination first, and then release it. And if there's something that you need to participate in, it will appear as a bridge of incidents, and it will feel inspired and like action that should be taken. So I hope these 3 points are helpful, and I'll talk to you again before the end of January. I hope you have a beautiful month, a new beginning, and all kinds of exciting ways of being and loving and knowing. And until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.